It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Let's go eat and drink. But I
can't tell what you're saying, 'cause you got food in your mouth. I'm your announcer, Zach Caton, and we're coming to you live on tape from Beehive Cigars at 1564 South, 300 West in Salt Lake City. Our guests today are company founder Kendrick Wolstenholm and Brandon Ovison.
But if you don't have to ask us, but if you want to ask us anything, you can. About anything. Doesn't
about
matter.
Anything.
About anything. Any question is fair game.
What year were you born again?
And now here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
First things first here, we're at Beehive Cigar here in Salt Lake on 3rd West, 15-something it is. We'll make sure that's in the announcer opening. But so if we're at Beehive Cigar, I should smoke a cigar. And we have with us the owners of Beehive Cigar, Brandon Ovison and Kendrick Wolstenholm. Is that correct? Wolstenholm?
Well, I'm the owner of Beehive Cigars. Brandon...
I own nothing.
You own nothing, but you're always here.
I'm always here.
Brandon,
I'm his right hand man.
Brandon still plays a spiritual role at Beehive.
I used to be the general manager of Beehive, and then Kendrick and I launched Apostate Cigars, where I am now the director of sales and part owner there.
Yes. Now get closer to the mic, if you would please. Yeah, you have to almost eat it.
I will eat it.
So let's do these cigars. What are these Absolutely. Two cigars I have here?
So the two in your hand, you have the
This
initiatory.
Is a Brandon you're hearing.
This is Brandon, okay. Yes. He's
perhaps the spirit of Beehive Cigars.
I'm the mascot, yes. So we have the red label in your hand there on the left side. That is called the Initiatory. That was the first cigar we ever released. That is a Habano style. Mm-hmm. Sumatra wrapper from Ecuador, San mm-hmm. Andres binder, and then all Dominican filler. And then the other one is the Zarahemla. That is our most recent release.
Oh, that's the one I have to go for.
Absolutely.
That's somewhere in Mormon mythology.
Book of Mormon, yeah. Zarahemla was basically the Book of Mormon's Sodom and Gomorrah. It was a established city that was destroyed by God.
Oh, that's right.
That's wicked ways. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I don't know how to cut these. You have to cut the end of the cigar.
Just
the tip.
Just a tiny 1 or 2 millimeters.
So it's kind of like... circumcising the cigar?
The
idea is just to open it up so you can pull smoke through.
So I don't know how to work the cutter.
Here, I'll do it for you.
Kendrick is full service today.
I know how to smoke it. I just don't know how to. I think I even know how to light it.
Yeah, smoking is the important part.
I'll get it lit for you.
So, Kendrick, but did I get your last name correct?
Wolstenholm.
Wolstenholm.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fine British name, perhaps.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Well done.
Let's talk about, so I didn't get the connection. I mean, I thought Beehive Cigars, and then it said on your bios, Apostate Cigars. I didn't realize you guys had created your own line of cigars.
Correct. Yeah. What you're smoking now is our brand. Yes.
Tell me about doing that.
Where to start? I mean, it was one of those things where, you know, we've been doing the retail game for a long time.
How long has Beehive been open?
2009?
Yep. Beehive's been around since 2009, yes.
Yeah. I'm watching Kendrick light the cigar for me without drawing on it.
Yep. Mm.
Mm. Professional cigar services sommeliers, that's, you know, you offer the different cuts. You got the guillotine or straight cut. You got the cat eye or the wedge cut.
What's
you
this
even
one?
Have a poke.
Wedge?
That's just a guillotine.
Just a guillotine.
Just a straight.
Straight across.
Straight across.
Because this cigar has, this is Apostate Cigar, and again, this one is which one?
It's called the Zarahemla.
Zarahemla, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It has an interesting shape, too. Is there something...
That's known as a box press, or in some worlds called a Cuban press, where it's got a little bit of... They actually, when they put the cigar in a mold, they then clamp it down with a vise to sort of flatten it
gets
out.
Gets it to flat. Fits in the box better.
Yeah, you know, it just... I think it adds a little bit of elegance to the look of the cigar. You know?
This is really mild. It's excellent.
Yeah, it's smooth. It's balanced. It changes up on you as you smoke it. You'll notice it getting a little more complex. Yeah, we like what we're doing. That's where the blending came in for us. To follow up with your question, after doing all the retail, 2020 came around, and we had always kind of talked about the idea of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to make our own cigars? You know, maybe just something for the shop, right?
Yeah.
But it sort of developed further when we found ourselves with a little more time on our hands during a global pandemic.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, you remember?
Yeah, kind of. So, a little.
Yeah. So we had some connections with some manufacturers through the retail relationships we made, and we called up a guy named Hochi Blanco, who runs a pretty prominent factory down there in the Dominican Republic, and told him what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Flew down, had a meeting, and he said, my house is your house. Let's...
Nice
make
people.
Some cigars, great people.
Dominican.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh,
well, interesting tie in there because I know Brandon for a minute. You spent time in the Dominican Republic in a past life.
in a former segment of the current life, absolutely. Yeah,
I think I know what that means.
I was a faithful missionary down there in my younger days, absolutely.
How faithful?
So faithful.
So
did
faithful.
Did you never smoke a cigar while you were on
I
your
did
mission?
Not. I did not. I did other sinful things, but no cigar smoking was done.
Kendrick, you also, I know you said this to me once, and then you walked away because you had to go do some business or something. Yeah,
It was probably to play Street Fighter, to be honest. Yeah.
Something on my... So something, and I want to say you said, this is probably wrong, you were on a mission in Paraguay. Was that wrong?
Scotland.
That was very wrong. Oh, that's why I wanted to talk to you. Because an old friend of mine who used to own the radio station X96 went on his mission to Scotland.
Oh, okay.
No way.
And he had some great stories that I wanted to share with you and see if they corresponded to yours.
Please,
we'll do it some other time.
Sounds good.
Let's get back to cigars. How many now you've developed? When did you develop this line of cigars, the Apostates?
So, like Brandon started to say, it was 2020. The pandemic hit, and we were wondering what to do with ourselves. And we had talked about maybe doing some really hands-on blending.
It here in the store?
To sell as a store brand.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's like a Beehive Cigars store brand that maybe we would wholesale to a few other retailers. That's how the idea kind of started. But then after we went down and blended our first three cigars, the Initiatory, the Deseret, and the Liahona, they're called.
Liahona, okay.
Yeah. They're all
Mormon
all
stuff.
All Mormon shit, yeah.
Okay.
After we finished blending them, and we had, you know, settled on, like, the artwork and everything, after it had all been created, we were like...
The artwork for the bands and the boxes.
Yeah,
and
yeah, we were like, this obviously needs to just be a brand that we sell everywhere.
Needs to be bigger than what we thought.
It ended up turning out to be a bigger project.
I would imagine the guy you were telling me about it in the Dominican Republic...
Hochi.
I would imagine he was very helpful and said, you know, you want to do this, you can do it.
Absolutely.
We had a lot of outside encouragement. A lot of people actually. Not when I say a lot, it was a few close friends in the industry.
Yeah,
that encouraged us to kind of branch out and maybe do something. You know, that
daring
kind of spin off of the success that we had seen from the shop.
Shop has been been quite successful, hasn't it?
It has.
Yeah. What made the two of you, I'm sure you have each have your own reasons, cigars, when, why? We'll start with the owner of Beehive, Kendrick. Excuse me, I'm the owner, which you should rightfully take credit for. What started you on cigars?
I'm kind of an anomaly in the cigar industry, I think. I didn't get into the business initially because I loved cigars or anything like that. It was purely kind of just a business decision. I'm also a musician, and I used to play the piano. I was one of the piano players at Keys on Main.
Oh, so you're a good piano player.
Yeah.
You're a pianist.
I think I'm all right.
He's pretty
all
right.
Yeah, I'm all right. And I had a lot of time on my hands because I was working at night, and I was like, oh, I got to do something during the day. What am I going to do?
and I didn't want to just go get another job. So, and I'd always kind of had a side interest in business. Mm-hmm. And so I just started looking for existing businesses that maybe I could pick up and turn into something. And I found this little cigar shop down in Sandy. At the time it was called Hungry Trout Cigars.
Hungry Trout? Hungry
and the whole
Trout, right? not a good name for right? a cigar shop.
Terrible. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Big and mouth they, brand. They, I could do you know, they'll hook you in.
The whole shop was maybe the size of this room.
Oh.
And they were only open 3 days a week. And I was like, are these guys even trying to do business?
Are they even trying?
So I basically picked up the shop for the cost of the inventory.
Really?
And he went out.
Yeah.
And
you had smoked cigars before that.
Yeah. I'd smoked a couple cigars, and I kind of saw the appeal. I wasn't super into it at the time. Mm-hmm. But I remember the night before I signed the papers to buy that place, I went down to Genie's Smoke Shop, which is another cigar shop in town.
Is that still there downtown?
Still there. Yeah,
been there forever.
I used to live 2 blocks away, so I just walked down, and I'd smoked some cigars, but in retrospect, none of them were good. So I was like, okay, before I sign these papers, I need to know that I need to feel good about selling these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there and I picked up the most expensive cigar. That
which probably means it's pretty damn good.
That's what I thought. Based on what I knew about buying liquor, I had a pretty good idea that mm-hmm. maybe this one was going to be good.
Yeah.
And so I took it home, and I lit it up and was smoking it on my balcony. And I got about a third of the way in, and the cigar hit that point. Every cigar has a point where you're a spot. Where
Real.
It, like, everything about the cigar comes together, and the flavors just kind of hit you the way it's supposed to.
Huh.
And I remember getting to that moment and going, oh, okay. I get this. I can sell this.
Will I get this? Will I get to a moment on this cigar that I'm smoking now?
You tell us.
Am I smart enough to do that? Or?
You are. Oftentimes, though, it requires a certain amount of attention and focus.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like something you would do in solitary.
Yeah.
Go,
or in a more casual. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I signed the papers and started to work on turning the thing into a profitable business. The first thing that I did, obviously, was change the name.
Yeah, good idea. Now, when I used to see the sign for Beehive Cigars as I drive by on Third West, I thought, well, I wonder if they make cigars there. You know, this just occurred, but I didn't really I never stopped in because I'm not a cigar smoker.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody in Utah that's a cigar roller.
Does anybody, I was wondering as you were talking earlier, it popped into my head, does anybody ever do it as a hobby, like at home? You know, they roll make their own cigars.
I've met a couple people who do, specifically in Montana for some reason. Mm. I met a guy in Montana who's a contractor who was, he likes to smoke while he works, doesn't like paying premium cigar prices. So he buys raw cigar leaf tobacco in bulk and just rolls his own and smokes them while he works.
All right.
I'd like to raise a glass to not only that.
Cheers to that guy.
That's a great story with the start of Beehive. I had no idea there, but let's raise that glass. We can talk about this.
Cheers.
Cheers, boys.
This what we're having here is Hamilton rum. This is their pot still black rum.
It doesn't taste like rum.
I know. It's just very deep, dark, all that beautiful deliciousness. And then we can move into the Taylor Tawny Port because, Bill, I know you like a little sweetness on the palate.
I do like port.
And I did this rum because Brandon and I have had an opportunity. I've been very fortunate to be able to present not only how spirits pair with cigars, but to do it next to Brandon in front of quite for as small as 8 guys, mm-hmm. on Father's
three
Day.
Guys. Three we had guys. Three guys. Yeah,
three
man.
Guys. Yeah. As many as 56. Yeah. I mean, just massive crowds. And this is one of our personal favorites that I think we really, that got me into, oh, there's something about cigars and spirits. And then we're going to follow up with a Tawny Port.
How many, again, how many cigars in your line, the Apostate line?
Six right now. Six. There will be eight in total when we're finished with the.
How has it been? You sell them in the shop here, obviously, but you expressed that you wanted to branch out and distribute them. How's that going?
Great. Brandon is kind of in charge of that front.
It's going well. It was nice having the relationships that we had in the industry when we launched the brand, because we know shop owners, we know, you know, various retail spots throughout the West. And so it was nice to have those friendships in place and turn around and say, hey, we've made a thing. Do you want to buy the thing and sell the thing? And they all said, yes. So that was sort of a launch pad for us. But I live my life on the road at this point.
Really?
I'm gone quite a bit, just being a different kind of missionary, walking into
cigar missionary.
You know, yeah.
That's exactly what it feels like.
You walk in, don't know these people.
It's our own church this time. We started.
I'm meeting total strangers and telling about this thing that I'm passionate about and seeing if they want to buy in. And it's
what a transition. Yeah, I didn't think about it like that.
So
that's cool.
It's cool. So yeah, doing that a lot. We're gaining traction. I would say a nationally recognized brand at this point. And
really?
Absolutely.
You've been reviewed in Cigar Aficionado and all that?
Not Aficionado. You got to pay to play over there, so we're not doing that one. We've had people
the
do
Wine
reviews.
The Wine Spectator. Right.
You know, we do a lot of podcasts. It's fun, man. Yeah, social media. You'll see us all over the place, people posting pictures of smoking our stuff.
I want to ask a couple of other questions about the shop, Beehive Cigars, and then maybe talk about cigar etiquette.
Sure.
I when I walk in the store, it's not a big store here on Third West. How many different labels of cigars, is that the proper way to refer to it? How many different labels?
How many different SKUs maybe?
SKUs? Okay.
Yeah. How many different individual items, unique items? I would guess it's somewhere in the vicinity of 1,200 or something like that.
Oh, great.
It's all right. You ashed on yourself.
Yeah,
okay. Happens all the time.
You forgot to tap that ash.
Yeah, I try to let. Okay, let's talk about. Thank you, Dawson.
But I'm.
I made an ash
of
myself.
You made an ash of yourself.
You could give me another one. I made an ash of myself. There you go. Thank you. So cigar etiquette. I thought you were supposed to let the ash kind of get it as long as you could, really.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to do here, and it didn't.
And that's why it fell off. It fell off when it was supposed to. Yeah. When you're smoking, it's not like a cigarette where you're actively getting rid of the ash. The ash actually helps insulate the burn on the end of the cigar, keeps it at a good temperature, and it'll fall off when it's supposed to.
Yeah.
If it doesn't come off with just a little tap, then
it's
leave it on.
Ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never scrape it off.
How about, what about the label? The ring around the cigar. Mm-hmm. Are you supposed to remove that? You smoke it up. This is a rather big one, which cover the one on this Zarahemla.
Yeah.
It covers a lot of the cigar.
Yeah, so you kind of leave it on. It can help the cigar remain intact and held together. Sometimes certain environmental factors make it so that a cigar might swell just a little bit as it burns.
Yeah.
The moisture from the smoke and all that kind of. So the band can, in some instances, help it hold together, but really it's kind of an aesthetic thing.
I mean, I love the way they look.
And so what I normally do, I don't know there's any right or wrong way. Some people will tell you take the band off before you even light it so that you're not like being a snob about what brand you're smoking.
Oh, right? I see.
Everybody's smoking a cigar and doesn't matter what brand.
Yeah.
So there's that school of thought. But then there's also I like to leave it on until I'm about ready to light it on fire.
And then you'll take it off?
Oh, yeah. So as soon as my ash gets to about here, I'll peel that first band off. You'll notice there's two different ones on here.
Oh, yeah.
So you take the secondary band off first, and then as you get closer to the primary band, if you want to keep smoking, you go ahead and just tear that off too.
I might have to have you take this off.
Yeah, it's really it also tight. Helps to maybe get a little bit of the heat from the cigar close to the band. So that
will it loosen up?
Yeah, it loosens up. They use a fruit pectin as a glue. And if you, like cold weather where we're at now, if you try to peel that off before the cigar is warm, you can take the leaf of the cigar with you. Mm. So if you let it heat up and as it gets closer, that pectin loosens a little.
And then what about letting it rest in an ashtray? Should you do that much or just as you feel the way you should do it? Or
they'll go out on their own, right?
So as a general rule of thumb, to get the best flavor out of the tobacco, you want to burn it at the lowest temperature possible.
Okay.
So to do that, you want the cigar to rest a little bit in between puffs to give it time to settle back down before you ramp it up. If you're constantly chugging on it, it gets too hot.
Hotboxing it, as we used to say with cigarettes.
Right. And the smoke turns acrid. You're not going to get all the flavors the blender intended you to taste.
If it goes out, is it proper to relight it if you'd like?
Absolutely.
It's okay.
That's a very common thing. It's very common for me to relight a cigar two or three times.
Is there a technique to relight properly?
So this is the only time you scrape the ash off is if it goes completely out and you've still got some ash, go ahead and just
scrape
the ash so that it's even and then go ahead and relight. Mm-hmm.
These are, and then there's a sort of a fetishist aspect of cigar smoking too. I mean, really, we're sort of touching on it, but all of the, now I was a cigarette smoker for many years and there's fetish aspects of that too. You know, the lighting, the packing of the pack of cigarettes to tamp down the tobacco.
Sure.
You know, I know some people who would, you know, roll the filter in their mouth a little bit before they lit the cigarette. You know, everybody has their own little techniques.
Yeah, the little ritual. Yeah, right?
Little ritual routine. Mm-hmm. And I think cigars are even way more ritualistic than...
I agree.
Than cigarettes.
I think cigars are more deliberate, right?
Yeah.
There's no lounges for cigarettes. You know what I mean? It's not a social experience, true. Right?
Well, it used to be, maybe.
But now, you walk around and you walk into a cigar lounge that is dedicated to premium tobacco, and it's solely for people to gather together. And that's, to touch on the point earlier, you asked why cigars for us. That's it for me. Community. People sitting together who maybe wouldn't normally sit together. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't see that with cigarettes, really.
It's true.
It's not glamorous that way.
Yeah. No, cigarettes, so. And I mean, they've become so demonized, you know, anymore. You see cigarette smokers, if you see them, they're trying to hide from
you. They don't want you to see them,
Seeing somebody smoke a cigarette's unique today.
Right.
I saw a young lady driving down the road smoking. I was like, wow, I haven't seen a 20-year-old girl.
You don't see cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of the sales, I'm sorry, business side of tobacco and then how vaping has come into there. What's kind of the segment of the sales revenue? What's leading that pack?
As far as tobacco sales go, I mean, cigarettes will always be your behemoth. Even though they're still frowned upon and demonized, cigarettes is the behemoth all day. Mm-hmm. Vape is right behind it.
Yeah.
Cigars, actually, as far as like market share of tobacco sold, cigars and pipe tobacco is at the bottom of the pack.
Yeah. I was just surprised the other day. I haven't smoked in... since like 1990, I think, maybe longer ago than that. But I smoked for 20 years, and I was just a vicious cigarette addict. But I remember when I was a little kid buying cigarettes before I was old enough to buy cigarettes, because you could go up to the gas station and for 35 cents you could put a quarter and a dime in a pole machine and get a pack of cigarettes,
right?
You know,
there's nothing where
nobody was looking.
That yank.
I loved it. And you know, and I was probably smoking when I was 16, something like that, because my girlfriend smoked. I got a girlfriend who was a smoker.
She was a poker too then.
Yes, she was.
That's what got me. That's what got me into my first cigarette too.
That was the first. A smoker and a poker and a goer.
The only reason I touched a cigarette was for a girl.
And she broke my fucking heart.
Yeah.
Tell us all this time.
Yeah. Where was I going with this? Oh, but then the price of the cigarettes. I asked somebody just this past Saturday who was a smoker. He vapes. But I said, how much are cigarettes these days? And did they say $10 a pack? Is that possible?
Yeah, some places more. Yeah. In Utah, I think you're about $9 a pack.
Good Lord.
But if you go to like Colorado, you're talking $10, $11.
I think the most I ever paid for a pack of cigarettes was $1.
Insane, right?
I think.
I remember, my grandpa had a little convenience store that I worked at growing up sold cigarettes, and I remember
here in Utah,
mm-hmm. yeah, and cigarettes were a pack of Marlboros was $1.75.
Yeah, when I was buying them in high school, it was like $3 max.
That much, yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
So cigars, how do they compare? A cigar is one cigar is kind of expensive. Can be kind of expensive.
What? Sure. Yeah. Think of cigars like a artesian cup of coffee, mm-hmm. like a cappuccino.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got you're talking about. You're very specific about the beans and the roast and the region where the mm-hmm. beans came from and everything. So cigar is like a craft cup of coffee, and cigarettes are crack.
Yeah.
They're both stimulating.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, you can't get around the fact that a cigar is still a luxury item. It's not. It's mm-hmm. not. It's not necessarily mainstream in a way like cigarettes are. There are plenty of people who smoke cigars daily. I mean, Beehive wouldn't exist if that wasn't the case, right?
Well, George Burns said he used to smoke 50 of those. What were Presidentes? Is that what they were called? I think that 50 a day.
Did he smoke White Owls?
I don't know. George Burns smoked. He smoked Churchill was his preferred
Churchill,
size,
that was what it was.
And they were the he smoked ones. Like 18 a day.
Yeah, but yeah. It was a Churchill size, but it was like a machine made.
It was Grey Cliff. Grey Cliff. It wasn't machine made. Grey Cliff, based out of the Bahamas.
I gotta Google.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, because this is going on.
He always had one in his hand. It was Dean Martin's cocktail.
Yeah, you wonder how much he really smoked it.
Well,
when he was doing that many, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the guy on old TV clips. He was definitely smoking them. I remember on Johnny Carson, Johnny was like, "So what does your doctor think of you smoking so many cigars a day?" And he said, "My doctor's dead."
Here's my favorite cigar joke. It was Groucho Marx on You Bet Your Life. There was, you know, he interviewed these game show contestants. And he's talking to this woman. He says, "Well, tell me about yourself." And she said, "Well, my husband and I have 15 children." "You have 15 children? 15 children? Why, how did that happen?" She said, "Well, I love my husband very much." And he said, "Well, I love my cigar, but I take it out every once in a while."
Fantastic.
That's racy.
So just to jump in here, circle back. George Burns, his favorite cigar was called El Producto.
Oh, that's a store brand. That's a man.
At the time,
sounds machine made. Yeah.
Back at the time, though, it says they were handmade.
Oh,
they are now machine.
Machine
made
now. Mm. So, by hand rolled at the time.
So we were both wrong,
or both right.
We're both right.
I like that better.
Yeah. That was you got a cheer. Yeah. Now I would. Oh, is this the port right here?
We both have half the truth.
Tiny port.
So I haven't tiny tried port. It. So how?
I taste a little bit of that. Tommy. That's the rum still. So
I could talk about this all day. You guys also sell pipes and pipe tobacco. I used to have a collection of pipes and smoke them. Yeah, I had one like a colonial pipe with a really long stem that pipes. My ex-wife. Yeah. No, it was a briar of some sort.
Okay,
but and it had a artificial stem. Wasn't wood, but I had a Sherlock Holmes meerschaum, calabash carved out of a calabash root, which I bought here in town. Maybe at Genie's.
Probably
I don't
Genie's
know
or
when I was
box, yeah.
when I was 20 or something like that. And of course, I dropped it and they break.
They do
because they're clay and yeah.
Meerschaum especially is fragile. Yeah,
it was great. I liked pipe smoking again. The fetish aspect. Mm-hmm. Did I see you pick up a pipe and smoke it for a second there?
I do. And I have to.
What smokes a pipe a lot?
Yeah, I smoke a pipe as much as I smoke cigars. Mm.
Oh, that's delicious.
Isn't that something? Tawny Port, 20 year. You know who really got me into port and cigars is Kendrick. Because I didn't realize the first time I had a wine with a cigar was in San Diego Old Town. What's the name of that?
Churchill's.
Churchill's. Uh-huh. Went into that tobacco shop lounge. Mm-hmm. And
the little outdoor patio. There.
Outdoor patio. No spirits. They're like... the woman had like a muumuu on. She's like, "What do you want, kid?" She lit the cigar, and then this young guy came up and he was like, "What are you drinking?" And I'm like, "You have any whiskey or what do you think?" And he's like, "Nah, it's just beer and wine." I'm like, "I've never really had a wine, and here I am a Somali. I never had a wine with a cigar." And he's like, "Oh, try this." He splashed it, tasted it. I'm like, "Perfect."
Yeah, it's a pairing that works.
Pairing that works. Yeah. But then shortly after that, we were chatting, and I had no idea that ports would be so. I mean, I heard about it, but I didn't experience it. And talk about being influenced by people to lead you on from your three cigars that you blended. Like, this is a little bit bigger of a thing. So it really opened my palate to other options.
When
so
I'm smoking a cigar and drinking a port, I feel like a lord.
I don't
a
know
vampire you, lord.
Yes, I don't know vampire. If you're familiar with the Fire Sign Theater, but one of their records, there's a great line on it where they're doing, and it just comes to mind all the time. It says, "All right, gentlemen, it's time for port and cigars in the war room."
Perfect.
You know, it's, in the war yeah. room. This is fascinating. I could talk about this stuff all day. This is great. Beehive Cigars, thanks for being a great host to Brandon Overson and Kendrick Wilson Hume. It doesn't roll off the tongue,
it
actually.
It does not. Yeah. If you could hear my great 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 grandfather pronounce it, he was the one that came over from England. He would have pronounced it Wilsonholm.
Wilsonholm.
Listen,
it's not Worcestershire.
Sounds Welsh.
Well, yeah, just a whisper off the tongue.
Just a bunch of vowels.
Yeah.
One W and then some vowels.
Can you work this for me? This cigarette sure. or this yeah. cigar lighter, because there's a little burnt place there.
Oh yeah.
Oh there. Why couldn't I get that to? I just want to burn it off there, so it's
even and out.
I know what I'm doing by doing that, right?
Absolutely. You're yeah, correcting you. The burn. You're
thank
good.
Thank you. All right. Let's move on to a bit of news, shall
yeah,
we?
Yeah, let's do a little splash of news.
All right.
Does that sound good?
Splash of news. It's all right. Swimming statistics.
It's all
right?
Swimming statistics. Here we go. Splash of news today. Food and Wine Magazine reports that TikTok is turning the French press into the ultimate happy hour tool. The article reports that if TikTok is good for anything, it's surfacing a great hack. And now it appears content creators are taking notice of an age-old use of the French press to make cocktails as well. Popular TikToker Erica Vetrini posted her quick hit Sangria Meets Aperol Spritz recipe, made with a cut up peach, sliced orange, sliced cherries, a squeeze of orange juice, Aperol, and Prosecco. She then covers the press and stores it in her fridge for a few hours. Then she simply presses, as you do with coffee, pours over ice, and voila, cocktail time. Comments on the hack range from, "This is neither a sangria or a spritz," to "Genius."
That sounded kind of good.
Yeah.
I'm on the genius end of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think so. Great. The article reports the French press for other cocktails, including anything that needs muddling. Think mojitos, juleps, or anything that needs an infusion of flavors. Looks like I'll be getting my French press out of hiding.
Maybe an old-fashioned, you know?
Old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A bunch of cherries in there.
Sure. Yeah, a little barrel-aged cocktail in there with a stick. I love it. Next article and last is reported by the San Francisco Chronicle. You know, San Francisco Chronicle, you can't break that paywall, by the way. I've tried 12 Ladder. I've tried all. I've tried.
Yep.
Yeah. Had to buy the subscription. But well worth it because, quote, bachelorette parties are descending onto Napa, whether wineries like it or not. All right, this is it. The article reports, it was 10:15 a.m. and a group of women pulled up to the six-hour Napa wine train tour wearing sachets and matching outfit. It was obviously a bachelorette party, and they were already inebriated. So we knew we had our hands full right from the beginning of the day, quotes recalled Nathan Davis, the wine train's general manager. So this is the fun part, guys. The party had to be asked repeatedly to quiet down. At the one winery stop, they opted out of the tasting, took off their shoes, and laid down in the field of grass instead. After that, they called an Uber to return to the 54-person train cheering as they pulled
by. Nice. Can you imagine being the guy who's like, excuse me, ladies, could you keep it down to a dull roar?
You know, if trains aren't your jam up in Napa, then you can also opt for the options of the, quote, get crushed in Napa pedal crusher that's tooling around in downtown. I got to tell you, I love Napa Valley in the downtown. You can go to Oxnard Market. There's a ton of tasting rooms throughout. But one of my favorite activities when I'm in wine country and I stay in Napa, I go to their theater. It's an old school theater with the beautiful ticket office in front, and you see whatever movie's coming about, and you can just sit there and chill, and it's a lot of fun. Anyways,
Kendrick,
that's
Kendrick and I were in Napa in June, and they have a really nice cigar lounge there. It's
perfect.
Called Napa Cigars. Check it out. Yeah.
Excellent.
All right, let's move on to the game we play. This is a little game. I got some flashcards here. I have not looked at the answers. I'm going to ask each of you, both of you, these questions. You can both answer, okay? Well, I have to turn on the flashlight. It's rather dim in here, so I can't quite read it. So let's see. Question number one. A cremaster, is that right? Cremaster refers to a brand of vibrator, a person who orchestrates on an orgy, a sexual position, or a muscle associated with male orgasms. A cremaster.
Can you read those four one more
please,
time?
Please give me the four again, because they are all possible.
So how do you spell cremaster?
C-R-E-M-A-S-T-E-R.
Are they trying to say cream master? Is it more of an innuendo?
C-R-E-A-M?
C-R-E-M. Cremaster. A-S-T-E-R. Right. A brand of vibrator, a person who orchestrates an orgy, a sexual position, a muscle associated with male orgasms.
I got to go with D.
A muscle associated with male orgasm?
It just sounds like an organ or a muscle. Or
yes? You? No response?
He's just envisioning so many things.
I'm going to go with the orgy one.
Orgy.
A person who orchestrates an orgy.
It's the most fun.
Very apropos.
It's the most fun.
I think that's the one I'm kind of...
The master to. Of...
Let's friend. See. A muscle associated with male orgasms. That was my first thought.
That's the one that makes the most sense, but it's not the most.
So the funny thing about these cards is when I was a Somm back east in the mid-2000s, we would, on Thursdays, I would do flashcard Thursdays, because during pre-shift, before the restaurant opened, you got a lot of church nods, and Thursday's like, okay, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, everything's
about
happening,
to be the weekend.
I need you.
Yep.
And I would do flashcards mixed with wine cards. So I pulled these out of old storage, and I want to share them with you guys. So I literally did this on the floor of
Love
the
it.
Restaurant. Could never do
No,
that
this is
today.
Awesome.
You could never do that today.
I mean,
I want to know what the next question is.
All right, here we go.
Is it
easy.
Sexual in nature, too?
Yes, it is, kind of. this one I know the answer to. I haven't looked, but I know the answer. It's kind of common. Yeah, I think you guys know this. Marilyn Chambers, star of the highly successful porn film Behind the Green Door.
Okay.
It's a classic. Was also a what? A TV weather girl, the Ivory Snow soap model, a high school teacher, or Miss Nebraska?
I was about to call myself a Marilyn Chambers fan, but now...
She was underage when she did that movie, I believe.
Oh, I think I've heard about that.
Yeah. She kind of went legit, too. She was like, she was in a Stephen King made-for-TV movie.
I'm going to go with she was the beauty queen, pageant queen.
I was...
Miss Nebraska?
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
Now, I know the answer to this.
She
was the
teacher?
Ivory soap girl. She was on a box
ivory
of...
Ivory soap,
holding a baby. It says, Marilyn's double life created publicity and profits for the film's producers, but she was... The Marilyn Chambers was 99... And 44 100% pure. That's what they would put on the box of ivory soap flakes. She was the model for that. And finally, this question. We'll do three here. True or false? During Prohibition, hard alcohol was permitted, but wine was freely permitted. I'm not sure I know the answer to this.
I'm going to say false.
I think it was a kibosh on everything.
You're right. False.
Yeah.
False.
Unless for religious purposes,
you could get Lafroig from a drugstore. as a tonic.
Lafroig.
Ah. Because they weren't selling it as alcohol. It was sold as a tonic.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
it was. Yeah. But you could go to the drugstore and get a prescription for Lafroig scotch.
Excellent. That's it. You know, we've run longer than we often do with these, but that's okay. You know, it's a free form. It's a fucking podcast. Who cares? We can sit here all day and smoke cigars and talk. I don't know how long people would listen to it, but
I'd listen to the whole thing. Yeah.
I think it's been pretty entertaining, don't you?
It's been pretty good.
Yeah. You know, it says here at the bottom of this, ask us anything, and that's meant to be addressed to who's ever listening to this right now. But I just thought that'd be interesting. Why don't each one of you ask us anything you want to?
Ooh.
But this goes to the audience. Ask us anything. You might regret our answer, but you just go to at the Let's Go Eat Show. It's just the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. Yep. Don't put that ad in there. Okay.
Damn it, Dawson.
Just go to the... It's always fucking up like that.
Fuck.
The Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. But if you don't have to ask us, but if you want to ask us anything, you can. About anything. Doesn't
about
matter.
About anything.
Any question is fair game.
What year were you born again? See, this, I'm only,
I'll
this
tell
is
you.
It's just a pre-question.
It's a segue. Would you like to speculate as to what year I was born?
Sure. I'm going to guess 1952.
You're close.
57.
50.
50.
Ah. Yeah. I'm 73 fucking years old.
Well, congratulations.
No.
No.
It's terrible. It sucks.
No.
No. Honestly,
my foot's killing me.
There's just something about you. I can tell you were a teenager in the 70s.
Yeah.
And that to me is... That must
a
have been...
A golden time?
It's just a fun time to be a teenager.
It was crazy. It was... I went to... in 1968, I went to Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. Lived on the streets, dropping acid, and for 2 weeks.
See, that's what I mean. Yeah. The questions that I have
Golden
would be
Gate
all
Park.
About that kind of shit.
Golden Gate Park, sitting there on Strawberry Hill, dipping my finger into a little tube of liquid acid, and watching the Hells Angels have a funeral for Chocolate George, who was killed on his motorcycle the night before.
So have you been to Haight-Ashbury recently?
I have not been. I haven't been to San Francisco in years.
Kendrick and I were on Haight-Ashbury in June. Mm. And that was the thing he was telling me. You know, it was my first time in San Francisco. But he was telling me, you know, this is where the hippie revolution was. I knew all that a little bit. But, like, seeing it now, it's really hard to picture your experience. Because it was very...
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You got a Starbucks on the corner and so forth.
It's been gentrified. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean...
And then, as I recall, the street ends in... It ends at an entrance to Golden Gate Park. And the Diggers were there. You know, the Diggers were a group that... now, see, you've got me going. The Diggers were a group that every day they would set up at that entrance to Golden Gate Park, and any hippie who wanted a sandwich, they'd give them a sandwich.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I have a very specific question.
Okay.
So we talked before we started recording that I've been listening for 30 years. What is the strangest or most remarkable thing that you have had the opportunity to cover in the morning show during Radio from Hell?
I don't know. I've had great opportunities, and I was in Berlin on a record company junket thing that they used to do all the time. They don't do that anymore. And it was to see Depeche Mode. No, that was in Stuttgart, and that, or I think, and then. But U2 was in Berlin, and they were in. They did their show. I think it was Zuropa, I think, tour. And it's a huge stadium, Olympic Stadium, built in 1930 for the Olympics when Hitler was in power. And we were there to watch U2, and it was a fantastic concert. And this Olympic Stadium was full, just crammed full. And we're sitting in this special box area. With really good seats, probably 50 people in this one little section that had great access and views and nice seats and everything. And I'm sitting there watching U2, and then all of a sudden I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've seen old newsreel footage of Adolf Hitler greeting the Olympic athletes from all over the world and waving to them and talking to them. And he was sitting in this fucking box that I'm sitting in right now.
Oh, my God.
And I went back and looked up the old newsreel. Yeah, right there. I was sitting, and I realized it while I was sitting there. And I went, good Lord.
You sat in Hitler's box.
So that was kind of cool. That was really interesting. Anyway, so you got to ask us questions.
Great questions. Oh, my God.
Love it.
What a great way to finish up.
Are we done? I think we're done.
I think we are. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks. Thank you, Jimmy. Thanks for having us, you guys.
Thanks, Kendrick. Thanks, Dawson.
It's been a pleasure. Beehive Cigars, come here. If you're hesitant about smoking cigars or want, they'll teach you.
We'll ease you into it. Absolutely.
They'll get you going.
The staff here are all just top-notch, and they love introducing new people. So, yeah, if there's anybody out there that's been curious, don't be intimidated. Come on down and tell us that you're a newbie, and we will...
You will not find a more passionate staff.
We'll make sure you're not a newbie for very much longer.
Well, let's raise a cigar to that.
It's 15-something. 15-something.
1564 South 300 West.
1564.
See 300 you soon. West.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Comments, questions, or angry complaints to the management should be directed to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow. Our theme music was composed and recorded by Doug Wild. Recording facilities as needed are by the Visit Salt Lake Media Center, www.visitsaltlake.com. This has been a Double Plus production. I'm Zach Caton. Congratulations on listening to the whole episode.